Morning.
Morning.
We spent the last couple of Sundays in the letter from Paul to the church at Ephesus. And we're in a series in that particular book, but we're jumping out of that book this morning because the next couple of lessons I wanted to get back to back, and we have our meeting starting next week. So we're going back to the series that we were in before that is based on questions that Jesus asked. And we're going to look at several questions this morning, but really the question behind the questions that we're going to look at. And as is always the case, it just seems that Jesus asks some very specific questions, but there seems to be something behind those or deeper in a lot of the questions that he asks. And as we mentioned, a lot of times we look at those questions that are asked to specific individuals, and they don't seem to necessarily be pointed at us, but we said we want to evaluate these questions as if we're being asked these questions by Jesus so that we have to respond. And as we look at them, even as the generic application of them, the things that are behind those questions. And we saw that he asked several different questions. The first week we looked at questions regarding relationship. You remember Jesus saying, who are you looking for? Who is it you're looking for? What do you want me to do for you, he said. He wanted to know. Once they had found him, what is it that they really wanted? Those were questions about what do we want out of our relationship with Jesus Christ. The following week, we looked at what are we focused on? Where are you looking? He asked questions such as, why is it that you can notice the fault in your brother but have difficulty noticing the fault in yourself? That he described as a speck in your brother's eye and a beam in your own. He's saying, which way are we looking? Are we more interested in looking at others and judging others? Are we more interested in internalizing the Word of God, saying, what is it that he's saying to me? Or he asks questions about, are you looking at the world or are you looking at Christ? What really is your focal point there? Then we, in the last lesson that we looked at, it was, how high do you set your goals? What are you aiming at? He was asking questions regarding the idea of, are we looking for what kind of righteousness? You remember he asked a question like, so if you greet your friends, but not your enemies, explain to me how you've achieved something. He said, the world does that. But as Christians, we should extend way beyond that. We should be loving our enemies. And so he's saying, what really is your goal? Or on occasion, when he talked about specific subjects, like the subject of marriage and divorce, as he talked to those that were around him, they were very interested in just the specifics of the law of Moses. And Jesus was saying, so is that what you're shooting for? Are you shooting for living a life that I meet the minimum requirements of the law? Or do you understand the thing that God was putting behind all of those laws as well, as he tried to better us? How high are we trying to achieve in our Christianity? Are we satisfied with minimum daily requirements, or are we trying to excel a life that is excellent for God? And we want to pick up there this morning. Jesus is going to ask some questions in Matthew chapter 16 and verse 9. I've got three different versions projected here because they're slightly different from one another. But in Matthew chapter 16, Jesus is talking to them about leavening. And they don't exactly get what he is saying. And as he's talking about the leaven of the Pharisees, it says they came to the other side. They had forgotten to take bread. Jesus said, take heed and beware the leaven of the Pharisees. And they're saying, well, did we forget to bring, is it because we forgot to bring bread? Is that why he's talking about leavening? And Jesus in verse 9 says, do you not yet understand? Don't you understand? In the ESV, he says, don't you perceive yet? In other words, do you not have enough insight to understand the things that have been done, the things that have been said? Are you so superficial that you can't grasp what God's saying? Or in the International Standard Version, he says, don't you understand yet? So he's been teaching, apparently, some of the same lessons, but they're not getting what he wants them to get out of the lesson. And I think that question shows itself numerous times in the Gospels. It's interesting how many times Jesus has this conversation about different subjects with those that are following him. He says things like, in Mark chapter 7 and verse 18, "Don't you understand either?" He says in Mark chapter 8 and verse 17, "Do you still not see or understand?" I want you to picture that if you're one of the disciples. I mean, there's different events that are around these different ones, and we don't want to focus necessarily on the events this morning. I want you to see how many times Jesus asked this kind of question. How would you like to have been one of the disciples? And what he's constantly saying to you is, do you not see what I'm talking about? Have you ever had that conversation with somebody? You've tried to explain something to them, and then they come back at a question, or with a question, and you're saying, or a statement, you're saying, don't you get it? Do you not understand what it is that I'm saying? I know I had conversations like that with my children on occasion. Did you ever have that kind of conversation? They just really were not understanding what the main thing you were saying was. And I think that's what Jesus is going to be talking about. He says in John chapter 8 and verse 43, "Why can't you understand what I'm saying?" I mean, he asked this question repeatedly. In John chapter 13, you remember when he washed the disciples' feet, he says, "Do you understand what I was doing?" Now, he tells them, they'll grasp that later. He says, I know you don't understand that now. Remember the whole conversation with Peter. Peter was totally oblivious to what Jesus was trying to teach. Peter's first saying, "You're not going to wash my feet." And then when Jesus says, "You got no part with me if I don't wash your feet," and he said, "Well, then wash my feet. Wash my whole body if you have to." He says, "You don't understand." You will. You'll understand later. You'll come to a better understanding of these things. He said other things. He would ask this question repeatedly. In Matthew chapter 12, he says, "Have you not read, or did you never read the Scriptures?" Sure they had. Had they not? He wasn't asking them, had you actually ever read them before? That may be a more valid question today than it was to his disciples. They would have read the Scriptures. They would have heard them read. They would have, from the time that they were young, have heard them read. But he's saying, what value did you get out of it? If you read them, what did you get out of that? Have you never read the Scriptures? Or the discussion that he has when they're wanting to see God in John chapter 14. And he says, "Have I been with you so long and still you don't know me?" I mean, what did Jesus feel when they said to him, "Show us the Father"? You can almost feel the exasperation in Jesus' voice. Are you kidding? You've been with me day in and day out. And you still don't know me? That was his response to show us the Father. His response to many of these questions is just not what we would expect. Because they just seem to have difficulty with this. In John chapter 6, I want you to turn there if you would. John chapter 6. Because I think John chapter 6, though the questions aren't the same, help us to get an explanation of what the problem was and why this question had to be asked repeatedly. Jesus is going to be having a discussion with his disciples in John chapter 6 based on the bread of heaven. Now, just to even say the bread of heaven, the Jews that would have been listening to him would have had a picture in their mind. They would have thought about the manna, as he intended that they think about the manna. But the manna that was sent to feed the Israelites the whole time that they were in the wanderings in the wilderness, and God taking care of them. So that's what the discussion is going to be about. But here's what I think he's going to help them understand. There was a book written in 2003 by Tony Campolo and Brian McLaren. Interesting concept of the book, but just great title to the book. The book's called Adventures in Missing the Point. I love that title. And that's what he talks about. He talks about how many times they, and if we're not careful, we, miss the point. He's saying there's a point here. It isn't, you've got to get below the surface and understand there is a point. And that's what Jesus seems to be asking them in those questions. In John chapter 6, the discussion starting in verse 22, on the following day when the people who were standing on the other side of the sea saw that there was no other boat there except that one which his disciples had entered, and that Jesus had not entered the boat with his disciples, but his disciples had gone away alone. Now this follows what event? Do you remember? This follows the feeding of the 5,000. So you've got the feeding of the 5,000, and they gather up all those fragments when they're done, and they've seen this incredible miracle. From this little bit of fish and bread, Jesus feeds this in this just tremendous size, a multitude of people. And they gather up way more food after he fed them than they had before he had fed them. Just if you can picture in your mind just witnessing the miracle that was done. And then the disciples left. But the people that were there saw that the disciples left all by themselves. They were in the boat, and they left. But Jesus did not leave with them, and the people saw that Jesus did not leave with them. And then what occurred next? In verse 15, when Jesus realizes they're about to come take him by force, then he kind of takes himself on the mountain alone. And then when evening comes, his disciples go down to the sea. They get in the boat. They head off. The sea arose because of a great wind, it says in verse 18. And they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles. They saw Jesus walking on the sea. So now you've already seen the feeding of the 5,000. So now what do you think? As a fisherman especially, what do you think? I'm guessing none of them had ever attempted walking on the water on their own. Stepping out of the boat, it doesn't take a lot of sense if you've ever been water to understand I'm not walking on top of it. So what do you think when you see Jesus walking towards you? He draws near. They're afraid. He says, it's me. Don't be afraid. They receive him into the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land where they were going. So now they've seen another miracle. They've rowed about 3-4 miles out. Jesus gets in the boat, and boom, they're docked. Now they're on the other side. That's what happens before this discussion. And here's what I think Jesus is going to help them to understand. He wanted to know from them multiple times, and from others around him. Jesus wanted to know, how can you still be missing the point? And I think in this passage, the exchange between Jesus and the people around him, even though it's more questions from them than him, I think there's no question that it helps them or helps us to understand how it is that they missed the point. First, we miss the point sometimes because we're asking the wrong questions. All right, now just put yourself in their shoes, because here's what happens. They're on the other side. However, other boats, it says in verse 23, they knew he had gone away, that the disciples had gone away alone. However, other boats came from Tiberias near the place where they ate bread after the Lord had given thanks. When the people therefore saw that Jesus was not there nor his disciples, they got into boats and came to Capernaum seeking Jesus. And when they found him on the other side of the sea, they said to him, Rabbi, when did you come here? I just want you to think about that question for a minute. That's the wrong question, isn't it? When did you come here? Why not? How did you get here? There was one boat. One boat. They saw it leave without him. They saw it roll away. They're asking the wrong question. And if we're not careful, sometimes we get caught up in things. They're missing the point. Jesus is going to respond to their question, when did you get here, by saying what? says that in verse 26, Jesus answered and said to them, "Most assuredly, I say to you, you seek me not because." Jesus is not going to say, "Well, you know what, I came in the middle of the night." They're asking the wrong question. If they had asked, "How did you get here?" what would they have understood if he had told them? If they'd asked the disciples, "How did he get here?" and they said, "He was walking on water," you learn something about Jesus then. But Jesus says, you know what, they weren't really interested in that. They were interested in how come it was that we didn't get to around there when you got there. They were following him, but they're asking the wrong questions. And I think it's important that if we're looking into the Word of God, that we need to ask the right questions. We need to make sure that we're trying to figure out how is it that God wants to change my life? How is it that he's going to make a difference in my life? I think secondly, it isn't only the wrong question. They came with the wrong motives, and that's why he responds the way he does. Jesus says, "Most assuredly, I say to you, you seek me not because you saw the signs, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled." Jesus said, "Well, explain to me what your motivation is." I mean, think in terms of, again, I had a discussion with a young person just a couple of weeks ago or a week or so ago. We're talking about what it means to establish one's faith. Because I honestly believe every young person has to go through that battle. I'm not saying that young people aren't believers in Jesus, but I'm saying they carry a lot of their parents' faith with them when they're younger. That's just natural. And I would tell you, their motivation isn't always what it should be when they're younger. I would just ask you this. Do you think there are children who have ever been at services and in a Bible class because mom and dad said they had to be at services and in a Bible class? Sure. But the goal is to raise them so that what? So that at some point in life, as they establish their faith and their trust in the Lord, they long to be with Christians and be in an assembly with Christians and be in a Bible class and to learn about God. But they don't start there. The motivation may be in the beginning because I don't get to do what I want to do if I don't do what they tell me to do. And so there's a part of that kind of obedience in children. There's other motives for serving God or for seeking God. As you watch those that would preach that serving God is a way to earthly means such as good health or great wealth. And we know there are people that have that message in the world. Do we believe that there's nobody out there following that message because of what is promised physically? Well, sure, the motivation can be wrong. I still remember a sermon preached on TV years and years ago where the guy's sermon was talking about how earthly wealthy Jesus was. And I thought, I'm going to have to listen to this. Because he never seemed to be earthly wealthy to me. He himself said, "I don't even have anywhere to lay my head. Foxes have holes, birds have nests, the Son of Man doesn't even have anywhere, no pillow even to put my head on." He was a carpenter's son. I'm guessing Joseph did not run the great Jerusalem carpenter shop that built everything, and therefore he was wealthy. This preacher went on to say Jesus was wealthy even from the time of birth because they brought him gold, frankincense, and myrrh. That was the basis of his Jesus' wealth. And you can have that kind of wealth, he said too, if you'll follow Jesus. And he talked about the gold that God will bless you with and then talked about, it doesn't have to be gold in the literal sense, but God will bless you richly materially as he talked. It was the most blatant sermon of that type I'd ever heard. But there are people that do that, we know. We know there are people that have that kind of motivation. We certainly hope and pray and don't suppose that it would be any of us, but it can be. I told you before, I had somebody that very close to me that changed the religious group they met with because there was more contacts in the group that he went to than the group that he had come from, business contacts. And that's what he sought. And that was how the decision was made. And he didn't make any bones about that. He thought, "I can serve the Lord equally well, but I'm going here because I can make more money in my business if I do this." my brother and I, my younger brother and I, both have a good friend that started his own religion and church. He had a business that was extremely successful and made millions and millions of dollars. And so he decided he wasn't satisfied with the church that he was going to, and so he started his own group. And my brother went up to visit him on one occasion where they were meeting. And he brought my brother into the place where they meet and showed him the things that he considered to be the most impressive part of their religious group there. And it was their incredible lighting system and sound system and the huge band and orchestra type thing that they had. And he said they had excitement at every service because it was a show that rivaled the shows that you could go see somewhere in large cities other than churches. That was the basis, he said, of the attraction that it had. We understand that. If we're not careful, it's easy for us to think in terms of what is it that I'm going to get. For them, it was food. If I find Jesus again, I get another free meal. When we assemble, it becomes absolutely key that we understand the motive every time we're assembled needs to be, what is it that I can offer to my God in this assembly? We'll gain from being here. He says we don't come just for ourselves. We come that we might offer to God our hearts. That's the motivation. And Jesus is saying, sometimes you ask the wrong question, sometimes you got the wrong motive. Why is it that I'm doing what I'm doing? I need to make sure that I've got the right motive for all of that. Thirdly, he says it's not only the wrong motives, he says sometimes we're seeking to satisfy the wrong needs. Jesus says, don't labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you, because God the Father has set his seal on you. Now, they're going to miss the point on that one as well. They're going to say, well, then what shall we do that we may work the works of God? They just kind of miss the point, even in what they are looking for. But he says they're seeking to satisfy the wrong needs. He's saying, be careful. What is it you're trying to accomplish? Judy and I had a discussion even this morning. I'm getting ready to preach a series if the Lord allows me to live to that point, and we see that date. But next year, a group has asked me to present some specific lessons on parenting and children, as well as marriage and that kind of thing. And we were talking about a point that is made in one lesson that I make. And we were having a discussion about how's the best way to make the point. But the point is trying to get young parents to understand that if we've got multiple children, because I can remember the days when all three of ours were like 12, 10, and 8. I can remember the days when we spent 8 hours every Saturday at the Little League field. All three of them were playing. All three of them on different teams. It occupied a huge amount of time. Each of them had either one or two weeknight games and three practices. Nearly killed me. I have no idea what it did to them. You'd have to ask them, but it nearly killed me. They didn't participate in a lot of other sports. And I'm not condemning sports or any of the other activities. What I'm saying is parents have to decide at some point. We have to decide, am I trying to raise an athlete or a musician or a singer or a gymnast or whatever the case may be? Am I trying to raise that person? That's the goal I have for them. Or do I want to raise a servant of God who gives their life to God? Now, I think a person can be involved in athletics and accomplish that. As a matter of fact, I believe a person can be involved in those things, and because of the disciplines that are involved in all of those, in the music and athletics, can be a stronger and more understanding Christian. But you still have to make a choice. And the point in that lesson is your child doesn't have to be great at four sports, two musical instruments, do ballet and gymnastics. They don't have to be. Not for what matters. For what matters, they need to be a strong believer and follower in Jesus Christ. And we need to make sure that we've got that in balance. And Jesus is saying sometimes you're satisfying the wrong need. There's a need there. But don't satisfy the wrong need. We know he said it the same way in other places when he talked about don't seek the things of the world. He's not saying you can remove yourself from them. He's saying don't make them the focal point of your life. And so they're going to say, well, tell us, what are the good works we can do in order that we can have what you promised? And Jesus is saying, you've missed the point. Look at the work that he tells them to do. What shall we do that we can make we may work the works of God? In verse 28, Jesus answered and said to them, this is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he sent. Jesus said, your mentality as to how to approach this. They're just, give me a list that I can follow. And Jesus is saying, it's about a Lord, it's not about a list. And he's not telling them they don't have to do anything. But he's saying, I'm not giving you a list that you can just check off. If you just do these things, then you're good with God. He says, what I'm telling you is you need to give yourself to me. Completely. And he's going to have a discussion later about that when he talks about the manna. When he gets to the last question that they deal with. When he's going to help them to understand, it's conviction to the Lord, not fulfillment of a list of things to do. He's saying, here's what your need is. Your need is to love God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength, even as we've sung, Hear, O Israel. That's the one thing. That's the one thing that's most important. Jesus, back in Matthew chapter 16, after he had that other discussion with the disciples, that's the same chapter where he finally just says, so just explain to me. What do you give in exchange for the soul? What's really important? We spent time yesterday in a luncheon with some people, followed by time in a funeral home, followed by time at a graveside, as we were there for the funeral and burial of Faye Gillespie. And we made the point that Solomon makes in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, where he says, it's better to go to a house of mourning. And I would tell you, here's what we got yesterday. I mean, there was great joy. Don't get me wrong. There was great joy on behalf of Faye Gillespie. She gave her life to the Lord and made that bold choice much later in life, those that were here to remember that. Remember, she was 86 years old when she was baptized into Jesus Christ. Oh, the Word of God still touches hearts a lot of times that we think won't ever be touched. And two things I mentioned yesterday that I thought were worthy of mentioning. When we baptized her, and I say we because Harold and I were both in the water with her, she had made a point before we went into the water. She said, it's going to take more than one baptism. I thought, that's just a strange thing to say. What does that mean? She said, one baptism can't possibly wash away all the sin that's in my life. But it can. And it did. That's the power and the grace of God. But I remember when I asked her for a confession, do you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? You know, and she wasn't strong enough a voice that she could be real loud, but she could be excited. And she said, I sure do. It was more than you could imagine. That she believed. I do believe. And then she's followed that by saying, very much so. Oh, I believe in God. Jesus is saying, what's important? What's important? We got a chance to evaluate life yesterday. And the value of every day. That's what Solomon meant. You go to a house of mourning. You get a chance to evaluate what is really important. Jesus says, make sure you're seeking to satisfy the spiritual side of your life, because that's the only side that's going to last throughout eternity. And then finally, he says they were looking for the wrong signs. He had already said they'd missed the earlier signs. He says, you came because you wanted food, not because of the wonderful things that you saw. You're not following me because you think I'm the Lord, because you saw these incredible miracles. You're coming because you can have food. And then he has this discussion with them about the whole idea of manna. In verse 32, or back before that, it says, "Therefore they said to him, 'What sign will you perform?'" Wait a minute, what sign? I just fed 5,000 of you from a handful of food. What do you mean, what sign will I perform? I just walked on water to get in the boat and we were instantly on the other side. You didn't even ask me about that. What do you mean, what sign am I going to perform? They said, you know what? God sent manna. Jesus said, I fed you. It's almost like they're challenging him. Well, yeah, you fed us for a day. But God fed our people for 40 years in the wilderness. Our fathers ate the manna in the desert. As it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. And Jesus said to them, most assuredly, I say to you, Moses did not give you the bread from heaven. He's going to correct them on three different points. One, he says, it was not Moses that gave you the bread from heaven. It was God that gave you the bread from heaven. He says, you need to understand the nature of where the gift came from to begin with. Understand the nature of the sign. If you're going to understand my relationship to this. Secondly, he's going to shift them from the past to the present. He says, I say to you, Moses did not give you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread. Moses did not, but God gives you right now, gives you the true bread. You want a sign? God sent his Son from heaven, he says. You're looking for the wrong thing. You're just looking for the wrong sign entirely. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. Now, much the same as the woman at the well in John 4. Jesus said, I can give you water and you'll never be thirsty again. She said, man, I want that water. She didn't think what he was thinking. She didn't understand he was talking about himself. Neither did they. Give us that bread. Give us that bread always. We want that bread. Jesus said, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst. But I said to you, that you have seen me, and yet you did not believe. All that the Father gives me will come to me, and the one who comes to me I will by no means cast out. For I've come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. This is the will of the Father who sent me, that of all he has given me, I should lose nothing, but should raise it up at the last day. And this is the will of him who sent me, that everyone who sees the Son and believes in him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up in the last day. That's just a great passage. And he's going to ask some questions later in this passage. They're going to be those that don't understand the whole nature of what he's teaching about the manna and the things that go along with the manna. And when Jesus talks about having to partake in him and all the association of that. And so Jesus wants them to understand that as well. In chapter 6 and in verse 61, it says, when Jesus knew in himself that the disciples complained about this, he said to them, Does this offend you? He says, you're going to have to eat this bread himself. Does that cause you to stumble? Does that bother you? You're missing the point still. How do you continue to miss the point? He says, I am the bread of life. What are you looking for? We're in a time even today where people are interested in what they can see. And Jesus said, the Father sent his only begotten Son. Did the miracles he did. What more do you need to see than that? To understand that he is the Son of God. It's possible sometimes to ask the wrong questions. In Romans 1, Paul says, incredible amount of evidence out there, and people still want to see something else. He said, look at what God has given us. He's given us the signs that we need. The question to them was, why are you missing the point? How can you not yet get the point? The question to us is, are we missing the point? It's critically necessary that we understand. In all of these things that Jesus was saying, he was saying, it has to be about me. Him. It has to be about what I'm doing to give my life to Him, turning myself over to Him. He says, sure, I've talked about a multitude of things. That doesn't mean those things aren't important. Even when he had that discussion with the Pharisees about tithing, you remember that he said, it's not that those things aren't important. But that's not what it's about. Those are ways that you show what it's about. He says, you've forgotten what it's about. It's about God. About our love for God. Our love for the Lord. Obedience is the natural follow-up to that. That's why Jesus said, you can't call me Lord and not do the things that I tell you to do. That's a paradox that won't work at all. He says, you can't have that contradiction and it actually both come about. If He's your Lord, if I truly make Him my Lord, then I seek to do everything I can to follow Him. If you've not done that, we pray you'll take care of that today. Make your life right with God. Be baptized into Christ if you've never done that. Faye proved it's never too late. 86. It's not too late to give yourself up to Christ no matter when it is in your life. And it washes away all sin completely clean to start brand new again. For those of us that are Christians, easy to get wrapped up. I know sometimes I get just so wrapped up in things that you have to pull yourself back and say, Mark, you totally missed the point. Make sure you get the point before you move forward. If we can help you, let us know while we stand, while we sing.